It's time for another episode of Spies, Lies, and Private Eyes. Here's your host, Terrence McCauley.
Jack Beaumont is a former fighter pilot with the French Air Force and later carried out clandestine missions for the DGSE. Dark Arena, the second book in his Frenchman series, is available from Blackstone Publishing. He is also the first Frenchman we've had on the show. So, Jack, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Thanks a lot.
Of course. So, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about Dark Arena?
Well, Dark Arena is a spy thriller, which is very actual. So it's basically set up in Europe and in the Middle East. And it's showing basically what could, let's say, have happened behind the scenes to reach the actual situation between Russia and Ukraine.
Oh, wow. And so it's very timely.
Very, very, very actual. And so it's the same characters as in my first book, because it's a series, but in a different mission. So the first one was more in bacteriological weapons in Pakistan. And this one is more about the energy gas battle on the Med Sea in Europe and Middle East, which leads to the situation with Putin and Zelensky.
Wow. So it's very topical then, isn't it?
Yeah, very topical.
Now, when you started the first book, did you envision it being a series, or was it something that spawned out of having an original idea for The Frenchman?
No, actually, when I started the first book, it was very selfishly, let's say, for cathartic process, because I had the PTSD. And it was a way to, get rid of my PTSD. So a friend of mine, one night drinking whiskey, said to me, you should write a book. It would help you and empty your mind. And so that's how I started to write The Frenchman. And I really thought that it was not going to be published or only for family and friends, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became a massive bestseller in Australia and New Zealand, published in Japan, published in France, published in the US. And then I was ordered book 2, 3, and 4. Yeah.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thanks.
That's incredible. And it's wonderful that you were able to work through some of your concerns and some of the things that happened to you while you were creating this book. And look at the beautiful product that came from it. Had you ever considered being a writer before, or was that something that just occurred to you while you were talking to your friend for the first time?
I always liked writing, and as I'm sure you know, in the intelligence services, even if you're on the field, actually a massive amount of the job is to write reports, because everything has to be well documented, and you should you have to leave a trace of everything you do. So you have to write everything down about what you just have done, how you just did it, who you met and why, et cetera, et cetera. So it's writing is something which I always enjoyed, but not on the not on the fiction novel side of things.
Right. Now, why did you think that maybe writing something fictional as opposed to something non-fictional was more appealing to you at that point in your life?
Well, that's very simple. I was not allowed to write something non-fictional. So if I, so you have some guys, quite a lot actually, who are leaving the intelligence and they decide to write a book, and it's a kind of an autobiography, and I did this and I did that, and actually it's very dangerous, very very dangerous, because usually in intelligence you on purpose don't have the full picture of the full operation. So you have some pieces of the puzzle, and you are yourself working on some of the pieces of the puzzle, but you don't have the full picture of the puzzle. So doing so by saying, I was involved in this operation, etc., actually, you don't know the impact at the end of the day on the full operation, and you might put in danger some of your mates, friends who are still in the field. So it was clearly not the intent. Writing fiction was the only choice for me. And then writing at a third person was helping me in my cathartic process to give myself an external point of view, which would give me a kind of clearance to write down my emotions and everything as if it was not me. So that's why,
right.
Yeah, that's why the books, actually, especially the first one, there is a lot of emotions there because of this reason, and it's very highly realistic in terms of methodologies we use in clandestine operations, like the way we communicate with stickers. We stick in different places because we have no phone, no nothing. How you check if you're followed, how you drop the tail, and also the fact that 90% of us are married with kids. So how do you combine, being on, with another name during a few days or few weeks, doing some offensive stuff, and then you come back home and you have daddy, and your wife asking you to go and pick up some milk, and
right.
and for you, going out to pick up some milk is a war mission, because it means,
right.
Yeah, it means going back out again and potentially being observed, being followed. So it's makes everything very complex, so that's
right.
What I wanted to address here in my books.
Right. Yeah. And it's great that you do focus on the family life of the characters, because in the spy thriller genre, you don't see an awful lot of that. You see a lot of the lone wolf or the gritty loner, but you don't really see their family life. And one of the authors who did that and did it really well was Len Deighton. He's somebody that a lot of people have heard of, but not a lot of people, but comparatively to John le Carré and some of the larger giants in the industry, haven't really read a lot of his stuff. And he does a wonderful job of combining practical spy craft with the family life, and it works when he does
yeah.
it. And I know that's the way it works with your books as well.
Yeah, because that's where, the reason why we have false identities. So I had five different IDs all the time on which I was turning to lead between 10 to 15 missions in the same time. And actually, the reason why we have false identities is not just to be cool in the lobby of the hotel and say my name is Bond, James Bond, it's to protect the family,
right.
because the worst scenario is the bad guys you are fighting find out about your real ID, and then of course they come to your family and then they have a leverage, and that's what you don't want. So that's the ultimate threat, in your mind all the time. And when you are away on mission, you never know, because you have no contact with the family when you're someone else. You never know if something is at the moment happening with your family, and if something is if someone or something is threatening your family while you're away. You don't know.
Right.
And it's so the tension of being a spy, of course, comes from the mission itself, but also from the family side that you have to hide somewhere in your brain during the time of the mission. And that's what makes it really complex,
Right, yeah, oh, I can only imagine. I mean, because even though you're doing something that's incredibly important for your country and for often their allies, you've still got to worry about the doctor's appointments, the events that your child is going through, just like as we all do growing up, and even your spouse. And that's something that a lot of works in this field don't really touch upon, which is that family
yeah.
element, and that the person that you're reading about is actually a person instead of just a cardboard character like James Bond is often portrayed in the films.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also, when you come back home after having so many different IDs, at the end of the day, you start to lose yourself a bit and not, tend to forget about who you are, who you really are. And then
right.
your real ID, being a father and a husband, actually becomes a sixth ID, an additional ID. And you play the role of this ID the same way you play the role of the clandestine and false IDs you have. So you play the role of the father, you play the role of the husband,
right.
the same way you play another character every day. And that's how you lose yourself. And that's how you The DGSE, so the French CIA, has the highest rate of divorce and suicide in the whole, you know, military forces.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. So it's usually a recipe for divorce, you know, because you're away for a few days, few weeks. You can't tell your wife where you're going, and no contact with the family when you're away. And then when you come back, you're just playing a game and you're not yourself. I remember once my wife, you know, telling me, I met this very nice lady, you know, in front of the school of the kids. Our sons are in the same, you know, classroom. She's very nice. We had a few coffees. And we might get invited to their place for dinner sometimes. And immediately you go, how did you meet her? What did she tell you? Have you seen her car? Have you seen the ID plate of the car? Have you seen the husband? Was she asking any questions on me? Did she come to our place? Have you been to her place? Was it always the same coffee you were going to? You know, what was she asking, et cetera. All those questions. And your wife goes like, stop, you know, stop. I can't live like this. I need a social life, you know, and you can't afford it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, because you've always got to be, I had that in mind. And you know, a lot of people think that some of these concerns come from people in the smoky rooms. And I say this as I'm smoking a cigar right now talking to you, but that there's this grand plan and things always happen the same. But oftentimes a lot of people in that life are used and they may not even know the extent to which they're being used. And yeah, it's rarely someone who has the entire picture. They only know a little bit of it. It could be somebody saying, oh, you met somebody today. What are they like? Oh, what does she do? Stuff that civilians like me might think is innocent, but somebody like you can't look at it from such a simplistic lens.
Yeah, no, you can't. It's being in the intelligence. So as you mentioned, I mean, before being a spy, I used to be a fighter pilot. And when you are a fighter pilot, it's when you are going at war. So I was engaged in lot of different conflicts, but it's a direct threat. You know, you are flying an Air Force jet, you are in a flight suit, and you are fighting some guys, and those guys are fighting you. It's very direct engagement. You know who you're fighting, and they know who they are fighting. Then I was in special forces for a few years, and I did the hunt of the Serbian war criminals in the Balkans. In Bosnia and everything for 2-3 years. It's same, even if it was a bit starting to be a bit murky, still you're flying an Air Force plane. The guys you are carrying, you know, are, you know, in green. You have guns, you do a certain kind of things. I remember landing in some countries. And trying to take off again, and you had pickups on each side of the plane, trying to stop us, shooting with Kalashnikovs, you know, in front of the plane and everything before we were able to take off. But you know who you're fighting. When you're a spy, when you're a fighter pilot or special forces and you come back from those missions, you can have real holidays, you can have a weekend, you can rest. Right. Those guys are not going to come and chase you at home. But when you're a spy, it's all the time. There is no weekend. There is no holiday. There is no nothing. It's much more insidious. You don't know who the enemy is, where he is, where he can come from. It can be anyone. It can be the new girlfriend around the corner. It can be anyone. So you reach a level of paranoia. Which you don't have in normal defense forces, because everyone is a potential enemy, and this is very heavy because there is no break. So I did roughly 8 years of clandestine operations under false identities. So it's basically 8 years of war mission nonstop.
Yeah,
because you have no break. You can't take a holiday.
No, I was just going to say no. There's no holiday, and even the most innocent vacation, if you will, you're always on high alert because you never know what could possibly happen. And that's the kind of toll I don't think a lot of people who read this kind of fiction really understand. I mean, it's usually used as a plot device to set up something else. But, you know, the way you write, you really convey it with a human aspect that I think is admirable and rare in the genre.
Thanks.
Thank you. You really do. No, it's important work. And also, too, when you discuss the importance of paperwork in that kind of life, people don't understand that a lot of it is record keeping. A lot of it is the non-sexy stuff. It's not tuxedos and martinis. It's the stuff that's the actual grit work that you're doing that you don't know if it's going to bear fruit somewhere down the line, but somebody else will. And it took an awful lot of risk and effort for you to get that kind of information. And that must make for incredible fiction and inspiration when you're putting your books together.
Yeah, it's funny because I wrote the story. I changed it a bit, but I wrote the story in the first book in The Frenchman. Mm-hmm. But once I was in one of those shitty countries, you can imagine, and I was in the only way you can have a drink is at the bar of the hotel. You know, the big hotel, 5-star hotel, and there is only one in the city.
Right.
And so I was at the bar of this hotel having a drink. And of course, it was a Muslim country, so you were not allowed to have a drink otherwise. And I had this other guy. I had this other guy on at the other end of the bar having a drink himself. And we looked like each other, you know. And so I looked at him. He looked at me. We had a little smile. So I never had the confirmation. But my guess is that he was CIA, and that we ended up, the two of us, you know, sitting next to each other and having drinks together and doing little jokes like, do you want a vodka martini, you know, and smiling about it, and just talking about the music in the background, you know, and life and this and that. And we all knew that we were bullshitting, you know, and we were not who we were saying we were, but we right. both knew it, and that was fine. And we stayed like this for, I don't know, the whole night, like maybe 4 or 5 hours chatting like this. Mm-hmm. And it was very funny. And then he said, I have to go, looking at his watch, I have to go, because it was nighttime and I had to do something by night as well. So we looked at each other and said goodbye and walked, you know, opposite way. I'm pretty sure he was CIA. So, I mean, it's not only in the French services, it's also, you know, in services like CIA that you have this feeling of solitude and being far from everything. And, you know, this feeling of kind of being in the movie Matrix, where basically you see the rest of the population living their life in the normal life. And mm-hmm. and you are you know out of the matrix. You have a different vision,
right.
and it's really that kind of feeling. It's you can't. It's like scuba diving. From the moment you did it once, you can't look at the horizon at the ocean without thinking what's under the surface. And
right.
and each time you meet someone in a dinner, in a lunch, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Every time, immediately you think, you know, what's behind? Why is this guy or this person talking to me, approaching me? Why is he or her talking to my wife? Who is he?
Right.
And, you know, the threat is permanent from everywhere. Yeah.
Right. And you know what? It's amazing to me how perspective plays such a role throughout your life. And I'm just coming upon that now because you were a fighter pilot. You were a pilot for the French Air Force. You saw everything from the top. You saw how to prepare a mission. And every time I imagine you get into a plane, it is a mission, whether you're just taking it from one part of the country to the other. It could be entirely peaceful, but it's still a mission. And then when you were doing your clandestine work, that was perception on ground level, but it had to be so much deeper because you didn't have a machine around you. You didn't have, if you were flying an armed aircraft, you didn't have all of those weapons or even the armor to protect you. It was just you and that incredible vulnerability there. I think that's why you're able to relate that so well in both the books that you've had out now.
Yeah, it's I guess what's differentiates, I mean, the Frenchman and Dark Arena compared to maybe other spy novels in the mm-hmm. genre is that the reason why I wrote it was because of the PTSD. And so so the reason it's written is really highly accurate, highly realistic, and full of emotions, of the real emotions that you feel as a spy when you are on the field. in the mission. So how, you know, how you have to prepare your mission, because there is a massive amount of preparation. Of course, when you have a false identity, you have to make this false identity live and for it to be really highly credible, because otherwise, right. If you get arrested and interrogated, and if the legend, the false ID, falls after 1 hour, you're dead. You know, so you mm-hmm. have a massive amount of work you have to do, you know, in beforehand. And then, of course, on the field, of course, you're scared. Of course, you end in some situation. I was in some countries where people were hanged on the light poles in the streets, you know, and
Jesus, God.
And you know that if you get caught, you know, you're going to be one of them. So, of course, it's not, you know, it's not an easy job, and you have to live with this.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you have all those emotions being on the field, and you have to put the family aside in your brain. And then when you come back, it's not like in regular armed forces where you have maybe 2-3 days, you know, to decompress before mm-hmm. going back home. You're checking if you're not followed. You go to the debriefing. Then you leave the headquarters of the company after the debriefing. You're checking if you're not followed for a few hours. And then you come back mm-hmm. home. And when you come back home, you have your kids, your wife, this and that, you know, and a few hours before you were still someone else and willing to, you know, protect yourself with a gun, you know, so it's very hard to balance psychologically. That's why we have, you know, the very high rate of suicide and divorce and everything. Yeah.
God, I'll never be able to understand it, but I could certainly appreciate what kind of dedication it is required to be able to do something like that. And the story about how your first book came out of your trauma that you lived through, what did you learn about yourself when you started and finished that book and you knew it had a home, and as opposed to where you were when you started the second book? You know, like, did you grow as a writer? Did you have more confidence when you started the second book because the first one was so well received?
Yeah, it was, in a way, I was more confident, but in the other hand, I had more pressure because it was mm-hmm. expected when the first one was clearly not expected. So I had the pressure for the second one, but I was more confident because I knew I could do it. So it was a different feeling. And so I could, so for the story, I started writing it maybe 3 years ago, the second one, Dark Arena, 2.5, right. 3 years ago. So it was okay. It was much, much before Putin invaded Ukraine. Mm. It was much before everything happened. And so I, of course, based my book on real missions I did. And so the energy and the gas battle on the Med Sea is a very, you know, a topic that we work on a lot.
Right.
And so I decided to do it on this. And with, so full of anecdotes of my real life of as a spy are in the book. Mm-hmm. So you'll see infiltration on a boat, which I really did. So all this was set up. Normally the ending of the book was basically Putin invading Ukraine. And so the draft was all written, and then it did happen. And so the publisher called me and said, well, you have to change the ending now. So I said, okay. So I stopped just before Putin invades Ukraine. And I wrote a new ending 1 year ago now. Not spoiling the end of the book, because there is much more than that. But the new ending is basically based on a planned attack on Israel using the Hezbollah and the Hamas. And I wrote this 1 year ago. So, and then it did happen, but wow. the book was already printed. So now it's the new ending is, so it's very, very actual. It's very actual. So I might end up like, you know, the Simpsons, where, you know, everything I write is.
Yeah. Well, that's the blessing of knowing what you're talking about, you know, understanding these larger geopolitical actions before they happen. You could read the tea leaves and come up with something that's not only plausible, but ripped from today's headlines, literally.
Yeah, well, the number three I'm writing now is on the Chinese cyber attack.
Oh, wow. Okay. And that's
Yeah.
been in the news lately too, that so I know the head of the FBI said that
Absolutely.
we're expecting something like that, and it's difficult. It must be difficult for you to be able to sleep at night knowing as much as you do. And but I think that it sounds like the writing has been a wonderful outlet for you to channel some of that, and we, the audience, are hugely grateful for that.
Well, it's great when you can, communicate with an audience, and of course, the story itself, because you have two options there. Either you consider that I'm a big bullshitter and I didn't do what I did, and that's fine. It's still a good, it's still a good spy novel,
That's right.
and it's still a good book, and that's fine. And you can just read it that way. Or you consider that what I'm saying is basically true, and it gives an even deeper taste to the book, and you can see and feel, so see the real techniques and the real methodologies we use, and feel what is it to be in the under the skin of a spy, of a real spy, and have this feeling of all those emotions, which whether they are, family emotions, personal emotion, or on the field. So all this, communicating all this to a public and an audience, it's great, because I guess it really gives a different perspective on what the life of a spy is.
Right. I think there's that authenticity that you bring to it that really makes the difference between your books and the books of a lot of other people, because you don't just throw a lot of acronyms or abbreviations at us. You actually go through what it's like. And I think that the positive reception that you've gotten shouldn't surprise anyone, because these are very well crafted books, and they read really quick.
Yeah,
So
it's
where
yeah.
No, go
Sorry,
ahead, please.
no,
Go ahead.
I had to put of course a few acronyms, because to manage to reach the point where you can describe all those feelings, you have to set up the scene, and so I had to explain, because it's such an unknown world, usually for people, that I had to explain, of course, at the beginning, how it works. Setting up the scene, I had to give some acronyms. I had to explain
Sure.
who is doing what and everything, and then I could dive into the story itself. So I had some
Right.
people telling me, "Oh, there is, at the beginning at least, a bit too much, too many acronyms." And I said, "Well, yeah, but that's the world of espionage. That's how it works. And it's
Right.
if and if you don't get that, then I can't dive into the story itself,
Right. Right. Yeah, you have to definitely set the world, because you are world building. And even though it's set in realistic terms, you still have to build the world for the reader. So yeah, certainly, especially early on in the story, it's definitely good to set the groundwork for that. It
absolutely.
certainly is. So now you've gotten, I know this is your second book. You said you've just finishing up the third book. And then what's the schedule about when that's going to be released, and what about the remaining books that you have signed for in the series?
So number two, Dark Arena, is being released on the 27th of February in the US, by Blackstone. Number three should be released in 1 year time, so early 25. And then for the others, I don't know yet, but I guess that the plan would be one every year.
After that.
So, yeah, so the thing is, I mean, those books for the moment, The Frenchman and Dark Arena, they are roughly based on one mission plus a few anecdotes, plugged into this one mission, and a few and some fiction, of course, because I'm not allowed to write autobiographic book, and that's not the point. So I use those experiences and those anecdotes to create the feelings, the real feelings. even if the story is different, and I'm not really revealing any high state secret. So it's still a fiction novel, but with the real feelings. And so let's say that those two books are based on the experiences of, let's say, four or five different missions, real missions. Right. And totally, I did a bit more than 100. So I'm not saying that I'm going to write 25 or 30 books. But why? Because the methodologies we use to approach a human source, to recruit a human source, a person of interest, to grab the intelligence from someone's mind, or to grab the intelligence in a in an encrypted hard drive on a computer, to observe someone, follow someone, all those methodologies are always the same. So even if I did more than 100 mission, if I start writing more books or too many books, then it will be redundant, because methodologies, even if it's another country, another topic, methodologies would be the same. So it would be less interesting for readers. So what I'm trying to do is each book, you have, of course, the spy plot itself, but I'm trying to address something like, for example, the first one is basically how you recruit a human source and how you manipulate a human source using what we call the mice. I don't know if you ever heard about this. What is the mice? So MICE. The mice is basically the four leverages on which you can manipulate someone. So when you're gonna do the environment of someone being a ghost and follow this person, observe this person, the purpose of this is to identify his or her mice. M is for money, I is for ideology, C is for coercion, and E is for ego. So that's the four leverages on which you can manipulate someone. So the purpose is to identify the mice. And when you think, because you know everything from this person's life, that you identified the mice, because you followed him, observed him, tapping the phone, the emails, whatever, then you enter this person's life under another false identity, knowing everything about this person and having picked his mice or her mice. And then you're going to enter this person's life and going to start leveraging the mice and to manipulate this person until you reach the point where you take this person on the edge of the cliff, and this person is ready to be recruited as a source, as a human source, because this person has no choice anymore because you've been playing on the mice. So that's what I try to describe in the first book. Then in the second book, it's more about relationship between the services, between the allies, like relationship between DGSE, CIA, SIS, MI6, BND in Germany, Mossad, etc., etc. And so, and actually, we're all very friends. But when someone grabs the real intelligence, then of course there is no more friends. You keep everything for yourself. And when you get the real gold of the intelligence, and it's really hard to know what game, which game are playing the others, even if we're all very friendly to each other. So in this geopolitical context of Europe, gas, Ukraine, Russia, Syria, Libya, Cyprus, Gaza, Israel, you have a lot of games and a lot of corporations between the services of the world. So I'm addressing this and how far this cooperation goes. What's the limit of this cooperation? Let's say. And then on the third one, I want to address it's like in France, it's like CIA, FBI. You have DGSE and DGSI, like FBI, and you have a kind of a war, you know, between those two. You know, who is doing what, and one depends on the Ministry for Defense and the other from the Ministry of the Interior. And so you have a kind of a competition, and sometimes those two services are, you know, dumping agents of the other one, so that the other one can be badly perceived, which provides more power to the one who did the trick.
Right.
So you have this internal fight, you know, on for political reasons, basically,
right.
High level political reasons, which at the end of the day can create some big mess. Like, you know, you can have a terrorist guy managing to go, you know, through the fence because those two are fighting for political reasons.
Right. Right. Yes. I can only imagine, because, you know, a lot of times in literature, and especially in the movies, you always see this thing where everybody's working together, or they're all against each other. But in reality, every intelligence agency's first loyalty has to be to the country that they serve. And it shouldn't be any other way. I mean, for you, it was France first. For the CIA, it's America first. For the British, it's for England first. And that's also part of everything that you cover in your books, because you show that real dynamic there that, yeah, we're allies, but we're not the same country. There are different concerns.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, that's definitely important to highlight. And you do so well in your work. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time to do it.
Well, thanks a lot for having me and for your interest in my books.
Oh, of course. Now, how can people follow your career as you're going along? Your website, social media presence, stuff like that.
Look, I'm. You can find me on Instagram as Jack Beaumont _ official. That's my Instagram profile, Jack Beaumont _ official. Otherwise, of course, on LinkedIn, I'm Jack Beaumont. On Twitter, X, Jack Beaumont Writer. And of course, the books, you can find them everywhere on Goodreads, on Amazon, in audiobooks, in you know, hardcovers, in you know, everything. You can find them everywhere. So don't hesitate to order them as soon as you can.
Yeah, no, definitely, everybody. And I think you're going to get a lot of new readers from the interview we've done today. Thank you so much, my friend. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Terrence. Thanks a lot.
And thanks to you, everyone, for joining us for another edition of Spies, Lies, and Private Eyes right here on the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. We'll see you next time, everyone. Take care.
You have been listening to Spies, Lies, and Private Eyes with host Terrence McCauley on Authors on the Air Global Radio Network.